Internet-informed guidance for the dedicated searcher, as read by the author, David Novak. This book is an element of the Spire Project. Chapter 5, Haste. The young rebel strode forward, plumed and confident. He was much too young for such a task, thought Albert, as he furiously sought a solution to this accidental disaster. Albert's small band of soldiers stood nervously to one side of the forest clearing, while around him emerged evidence of a much larger band of troublemakers. Unseen voices spoke short words, accented words, Aragonese words. These were not peasants up to mischief, as he'd been told. They were a band of freebooters, of highwaymen, who journeyed north over the Pyrenees Mountains from their home in Aragon, and would return there come winter, if not before. They would be armed. Their Aragon masters may even have sent them. The young boy approached to negotiate God knows what. They must feel confident indeed if they felt willing to negotiate. Archers, obviously, and as they had found him, they knew his number, how many surrounded him. What to do? The kingdom of Aragon was not often a source of such trouble, and this group had not long arrived. Albert had been sent at the first mention of bandits. Now, with just 8 men under his command, so much was unknown. Would they be dead in an hour? His men had weapons and discipline. His men, Albert sighed. He had yet to earn their respect. Well, they would follow his lead now, if only he could bend this situation to his benefit, find the high ground in this forest of uncertainty, turn this blade before it could be thrust. As we race around the internet, no longer are we presented with information of unknown quality from unknown sources. We encounter information supported by a list of similar documents by the same author, accompanied by comments and supportive gestures from other people and institutions, embedded in a collection of comparable resources. Internet information has a halo of supportive detail. Let us gather this information quickly, though. It is nice to say supportive details are available, so much better to gather this information at the click of a button. This chapter is largely an information dump. Strategy comes later, so to start with a bang, here is the bookmarklet to retrieve context at a single click. The context bookmarklet. There's 2 separate bookmarklets, one for Google and Yahoo, but it's much too complicated to give over an audio version, so you'll have to look this up at page 158 of the book. Frightening? Do not look so closely at this script, since you probably will not choose to alter it. Allow me to describe it in general terms. A bookmark is a link kept in a convenient place. A bookmarklet, notice the let suffix, is almost the same, but instead of linking, it causes an action to occur. When we click a bookmarklet, we run a JavaScript like the one above. One of the more famous bookmarklets is the Google Browser button, a bookmarklet that searches Google for the words we highlight with our cursor. Because of this, we may already know of bookmarklets as browser buttons instead. The 2 JavaScripts just above permit us to retrieve, at a single click, a list of additional publications found within the same directory as the page we are currently viewing. We covered the use of local context in Chapter 3 in our discussion of quality assessment. Add this button to our web browser's link toolbar or favorites list, but do not bother typing it in. Visit spireproject.com/buttons.htm and install it from there. Yes, JavaScripts pose a security risk, but you can easily see these scripts are harmless. They count the number of slashes in our current web address, subtract 1, then ask Google or Yahoo for pages that share the address. Installed as a simple button at the top of my web browser, I often click it as I browse the web. Bookmarklets are quite flexible. There is a bookmarklet for loading 2 web pages side by side using frames, another for changing the resolution of an image displayed in a web browser, and another for requesting that any click on a link opens in a new window behind our current window. This last one is handy since we can click, 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 and all 3 pages open as separate windows in the background. There are many bookmarklets. I urge you to explore this topic further, for it lets us accomplish certain tasks very quickly. I have 3 bookmarklets I use most frequently. The context bookmarklet mentioned above, a bookmarklet I call B4 that checks archive.org for past copies of the webpage I am viewing, and a bookmarklet to retrieve inbound links. I also include here a bookmarklet from Chapter 4 to retrieve endorsements. All these bookmarklets can be installed from spireproject.com/buttons.htm. Bookmarklets are flexible too. We can easily remake a bookmarklet to point towards a different search engine. We could adapt the Google Browser button, for instance, into a bookmarklet that asks the Library of Congress Online Catalog, LOCOC, or Amazon.com for their record of any book title or ISBN that we highlight. We could, for instance, adapt the before bookmarklet to check if a website appears in the ODP directory. Plenty of routine can be simplified with a bookmarklet. However, unless you wish to learn JavaScripting, I recommend only searching for and making adjustments to existing bookmarklets. It can get quite complicated. May I stress that the bookmarklet is a simple way to move more swiftly through the internet? Consider the B4 bookmarklet above. Rather than retrieve the web page for the Internet Archive, type or paste in the address, then press return, I have an alternative. I click a single button on my web browser's link toolbar and the task is complete. It is also very simple. Retrieving history or context or endorsements becomes a gesture rather than a task. Like waving our hand to catch the eye of a waiter, we do not need to make the coffee ourselves. What we cannot do with a bookmarklet, we may be able to accomplish with the next technology, embedded forms. Working with forms. A form is a collection of HTML tags that allow us to send information from one page to another. They are everywhere on the internet. At its simplest, a form is a text box on a web page. It is the text box on Google.com we use to search their database. It is the text box on our local library web page that connects us to their card catalog. It is the form on Amazon.com that connects us to their book database. HTML, hypertext markup language, is the coding language that tells a web browser how to display a web page. All forms are made from just 7 HTML tags. Forms start with the form action equals address, end with the slash form, and forms cannot overlap. Forms can be complex. Google's advanced search page contains a complicated form with numerous elements, many of these elements hidden from view, meaning not displayed on the web page but visible in the HTML. What is not commonly known is that while connecting a database to the internet is a technical feat that challenges anyone lacking a degree in computer science, moving a form is simplicity itself. We can pick up, move, and indeed alter any form we find on the internet. We can take it from one page and move it to another as we desire. We can easily shift the form for Google's search box and place it on our homepage within the context of our choosing. I call this embedded forms. As part of the Spire project, 7 years ago, I embedded over 130 forms within the supporting text that explained how and when to use certain search tools. Articles and patent research, government publications, and searching discussion lists stacked embedded forms one over another within a discussion of what an ideal search involves. Search the various significant databases in turn, all from within the one article. Simply start at the top of the article and gradually work down the page. It was a good innovation because a better search often needs only a few choice words of when to use a certain database, of what punctuation it accepts, and what to use next. My difficulty was the mammoth unpaid task of keeping such advice current. Using forms in this manner shaves steps from a search. No longer must we visit a web page, then send a request, travel to another web page, then access a different database, then travel on to a third. Now we do all of this from one location. Furthermore, to help others search effectively, simply share our search page. They too can work their way down a web page following our steps. The technicalities of shifting a form are simple, but not intended for this book. I wrote the instructions as an article in the online magazine By Information Today, and since I retain copyright, I'm happy to provide a copy of the text at spireproject.com/art20.htm. I will, however, draw your attention to two enhancements to embedded forms that demonstrate just how flexibly we can remake the internet to our advantage. Firstly, and typical of all computing situations, it is rare indeed when we cannot find someone who has solved a problem for us. Remember I mentioned how forms cannot overlap? This is a slight overstatement, since many years ago I found and adapted an early JavaScript by Adolfo Cuevado that folded multiple forms together into one. The latest version of my merged form is called a Unified Search Plus and resides at spireproject.com/plus.htm. It is free and helpful. Place it anywhere you like. The form mixes together, all in one, Hotbot, Debriefing, Google, AltaVista Search, all into one. As an aside, the creation of this form led to the discovery of the hidden Google in URL field search, a find that later led to the rediscovery of context in Internet Quality Assessment. Internet skills emerge slowly over years of study. Piece by piece, the pictures come into view. Altering forms. A second adaption of form technology is a rather amusing reversal of database control from database owner to visitor. When a database is placed online, many standard values are set by the programmer. Values like the number of matches to be returned by a search engine are coded into the HTML or left at a default value. If we can learn or guess the names of these variables, we can change their values ourselves. We can present the information as we want it. As our example, say our search for Google generates an address that looks like this: http://google.com/search?q=bookmarklets. The form that creates this address uses just one variable, q, and it equals bookmarklets. See the address? It's just there at the end, q=bookmarklets. Now say we add a value to an unused variable called num that controls the number of matches Google returns. So now the address reads http://google.com/search?q=bookmarklets?num=40. Tack the %num=40 onto the end of our first address, and Google returns 40 matches instead of the usual 20. We can accomplish this by changing the address directly, as we just did, or by adding a short code to the form when we move it. If we place the tag input type equals hidden, name equals num, value equals 40, between the form and slash form on our web page, then Google returns 40 matches. Yes, it is that simple. We just added a hidden variable and value. Yes, we can adapt a database to our purpose if we know its fields. We can hack a database. To learn a database's fields, the names of the many variables, read the HTML of the most complex advanced search page available. Many variables will be hidden from view but clearly visible within the HTML. Google's advanced search page invites us to view more web pages. Within the HTML of the page, it clearly labels that variable as num. At other times, just guess. Google has the all in URL field. It has all in title field. In a moment of blinding inspiration in about 1999, I tried and found in URL. In the early days of the internet, some foolish online retailers would set price as a hidden field. It was there on the page, in the form used to purchase the item, hidden from view. Crafty internet users could then move and rewrite the form to have a hidden variable equal anything they wished. Yes, purchase that golf bag for $2.29. Who says internet skills don't pay? Hacking a database, however, is not about discounts. It is about who adapts the database to suit whose purpose. In 1998, I adapted the form for the vast Library of Congress online catalog, LOCOC, into a perfectly sensible search just of their periodicals collection. Voila, a free search for magazines and journals by title and publisher, a search that did not require 7 steps to accomplish. It was just the search I needed to round out an article on searching periodicals and was an entirely unintended use of the LOCOC database. There was also no comparable alternative. On occasions like this, I simplify overly complex forms and apply standard values to choices I know I will make. Do not ask if I want to search by author, title, or subject. I'll set my choice as a pre-selected hidden variable and do away with the question. The earliest use of embedded forms I have seen adapted the form for the PubMed database, a prominent database of medical research by the U.S. National Library of Medicine, so as to fix our search words. This creates a rudimentary current awareness search. Click a button each month and look for any new articles with our pre-selected keywords. If we add a little scripting and perhaps a spider, we can create even more fantastic tools. I have a footnote script prepared in Perl, a popular programming language, at spireproject.com/spir.htm, that grabs a page off the internet and returns it with link addresses listed as footnotes. For years, Chinese residents used this tool to get around some censorship issues. Reaching further, we can easily convert a GET form into a POST form. With a spider, we can also get around the personal identification requirements of sites like LOCOC, where we must log in to be allocated a personal ID number before we can proceed with a search. With a script and a spider, we do not have to play by these rules. Type and click, let the script do the rest. Internet technology is wonderfully adaptable in this way. Gary Price and his pioneering work on the invisible web identified a great many prominent and important resources that remain beyond the reach of global search engines. The use of embedded forms permit us to access and play with such information as we like. Prepare our workspace in advance. Besides the use of bookmarklets and embedded forms, consider these 4 further suggestions. Firstly, have some place to copy, then paste information and addresses as we search. I use a simple text file that I keep in my Microsoft Windows Start menu. Into this, I paste key paragraphs, the addresses I may need later, and the keywords I find most useful. When I complete a search, I have not just a record of what I found, but also a record of where and how I found it. Alternatively, many sophisticated programs will archive sites as we traverse the internet, whatever solution you prefer, prepared in advance. Secondly, shortcut keys help us accomplish tasks on our computer more swiftly. Here is a short list of Microsoft Windows operating system. With practice, each becomes a simple roll of the wrist. If we wish, we can also define new shortcut keys to specific tasks. I have paste as text assigned to Alt-V on my system because I use an older version of Microsoft Word. Control-C for copy, Control-V for paste, Control-Z for undo, Control-Y for redo, Control-F for find a page, Alt-N to minimize the current window. One further shortcut deserves our special attention, the hard refresh. When information we request arrives incomplete, it often lodges in a range of computer caches along the route. Caches are a technical improvement that speeds the transmission of information through the internet by keeping copies of recently retrieved information nearby. A copy of the IBM.com web page I just retrieved may be held on the computer of my internet service provider, my ISP, for a time. If another person from my ISP requests the same IBM.com web page, the ISP may reach for the cache copy and deliver it instead of reaching across the internet for another copy from the IBM computers. Caches like these are scattered throughout the internet. This system of caches works splendidly. It saves time and bandwidth. Unfortunately, if a page does not arrive completely when first requested, or if a page is changed, we may not get a complete and current copy. To bypass these various cache copies, do a hard refresh. Depending on our web browser, we hold down the Shift or the Control button when we click the Refresh button. Control plus Refresh works for Microsoft Internet Explorer. Shift plus Control plus Refresh appears to work on all web browsers. There is some complexity to just which cache copies are bypassed, but this will almost always retrieve a fresh copy from the source. I typically need to hard refresh when I stop a page downloading, then request it again, but receive only half the page. The third suggestion in preparing our workspace is to build a useful homepage and use it as a starting point for searching. Bring together many of the resources we frequently access or should access. Add in a link to a web translation tool like Babelfish found from AltaVista. Add a link to searchenginecolossus.com, the definitive directory of regional search engines. Add a link to the directory of international government websites. Add whatever you like, but create the homepage for the purpose of searching, not for internal business communication or as a nice screensaver. As an example, visit the page I search from, the page I jump to when I click my web browser's home button, spireproject.com/spir.htm. The fourth suggestion is to learn how to turn off advertising and turn off flash while we search. I find I do not need either. Intrusive advertising in particular can be greatly curtailed by making use of a hosts file on your computer. This simply stops you from drawing information from certain servers previously identified as serving advertisements. For several years now, I have instructed my computer to ignore most of the banner advertisements that plague the internet. Read more on this topic from Wikipedia and from Fravia's Search Lore's site. Cutting corners. Moving swiftly is an admirable result. Bookmarklets, embedded forms, shortcut keys, and a decent homepage will certainly assist us to shave steps from any search we habitually undertake. Cut corners from our path. Build escalators and elevators to move more swiftly along paths we routinely tread. However, search tools like these have another, far more significant influence. A good tool will lead us to make more frequent use of higher-level search techniques. The tool draws us into making better searches. My homepage includes my form for searching different search engines and directories. Since I placed it there years ago, I noticed I reach for the Open Directory project more frequently. The tool makes it simpler to do what I should do anyway. Again, once I added the context bookmarklet to my web browser, I began to reach for context far more frequently. In each case, the tool led the way to a change in my search behavior. Even though we can rationalize I was saving only a single click or three, that I could always have visited the Open Directory project anytime I wished, having that tool nearby appears to be decisively important in helping me actually consult the Open Directory project. The tool leads the searcher. That a tool is efficient is almost an afterthought. If we accept this reasoning, then a vast gulf exists between what we know we can gather on the internet and what we do gather. To bridge this gulf, we should create and position near us the tools that draw us to use better search techniques. If we do not install a links button, we will not use endorsements or prominence in all but the most significant situations. If we do not have a language translation tool, like Babelfish, nearby, we will shy away from searching pages in a foreign language in circumstances when we really should leave the English zone of the Internet. Is it possible that so many Internet citizens do simple searches only because they have so few of the tools installed that would push them to do better? The most important lesson of this chapter is not one of the many rather transient aha moments as I suggest a new tool or technique. The message is more perennial. Reshape the Internet so we can easily gather the information we require. Use search tools to step from knowing how to search better to actually searching better. This is one of three simple rules I have for searching with haste. Rule 1. Reshape the Internet to help us find what we need. Bookmarklets, embedded forms, links and bookmarks, shortcut keys, hacking a web address and homepage. Rule 2. Never sit waiting for information. Juggle windows and get a faster connection. Rule 3. Create a search style all our own. Before we move on to rules 2 and 3, I have placed a range of search tools on the Spire Project website and often adapt existing tools to suit specific needs. If you find or create something helpful or need a little nudge, consider sharing your idea with me. Reach me via a form on the bottom of spireproject.com. Juggling windows. For anyone frustrated that the internet is too slow, the solution is to juggle windows. Juggling alone will more than double a dial-up connection and make delays in retrieving information from any connection of little significance to the speed of searching. You may juggle already. It's fairly common to have several programs running at one time. When I ask at my seminars, 3/4 or more of the audience already work with multiple programs, leaping from one program to another at the flick of a wrist. Perhaps we run a word processor in the background while we surf. Periodically, we grab a paragraph or web address from our browser, jump over to our word processor, and paste it into a gradually developing report. On this occasion, I want us to develop a very specific habit of working with several windows to the internet at one time. We will first learn to juggle, then juggle in different ways. For want of a better metaphor, we will juggle not just more balls in the air, but juggle off the wall and floor as well. Eventually, we will use the internet in a way that continuously opens new copies of our web browser as we search and closes them as we leave. Instead of viewing the internet through one window, we may work with 5 windows open to the internet, constantly opening and closing windows as we search. We do this for 2 reasons. Firstly, the internet connection plugged into the back of our computer usually idles, waiting for instructions. Information moves swiftly around the internet, but it moves in spurts and flashes from the internet to our computer, such that most of the time our computer sits waiting for our next instruction. Let me explain. Type a web address into our web browser, then press return. A request for a web page spins off across the internet. Pause. The distant computer sends back our requested web page, just the HTML document. Our computer reads this file and uncovers 5 pictures required to display this page. 5 requests are made to the distant computer, 1 for each image. Pause. Our software is set to request just a few images at a time, perhaps 4, so the 5th image probably waits until the first one completely arrives. Another pause. Finally, the page is assembled on our computer, images and all. We read this page. Big pause. We click a link and the process starts again. Notice the many pauses. Much of the time, nothing is happening. The computer waits for information to arrive. The computer waits while we read. We can see this waiting in numbers if we watch as bits come and go from our computer. Working with several windows fills these delays simply because we keep adding requests to the queue. The computer always has something to retrieve. The second reason to adopt juggling involves the way we search. Novice searching tends to be logical and linear. We step forward, then we step back to try another direction. We view the internet as we view a roadmap, drive towards a destination. If the road is blocked, we replan our drive and approach from a different direction. Experienced searchers search in a different way, rolling forward in several directions at once, moving in a way that we cannot move if we have just one window onto the internet. How to juggle. Let us place some of the tools we will need on our desktop. 1. Show Desktop is a simple Microsoft Windows program that minimizes all windows currently open. We find it down in our Windows/Systems directory. Create a shortcut to this small program, bring it onto our desktop, then add it to your toolbar at the bottom left corner. Set the toolbar to Always on Top plus Auto Hide. Right-click your toolbar, select Properties, then select Always on Top and Auto Hide. As an alternative, learn to use the keyboard shortcut Windows D. that uses a small key of the Windows image found only on some keyboards. 2. The Alt plus Tab shortcut keys jumps to the next window we have open or minimized. When we have several windows open, hold down the Alt key, press the Tab key, then Tab a second time. You'll see it cycles through the available windows. We can keep thumbing Tab to reach the program we want. 3. Also of interest, the Alt plus F4 shortcut will close the current active window. I use the Alt-Tab and Alt-F4 shortcuts so frequently that it has become a well-practiced gesture, a mere flick of the wrist. Lastly, we have 4 ways to open new windows. Select the web browser, menu, file, new window. The shortcut for this is Control-N. It opens a new window showing our current page. We clone our page. To open pages as we browse, we can right-click our mouse on a link, then select the menu item that reads Open New Link in New Windows. The shortcut for this, my personal favorite, is to hold down the Shift button when you click a link. Some web browsers like Firefox offer tabs, so the practice of juggling is a little different. Where are we going with this? We aim to liberate ourselves from looking at the internet one page at a time. We will search the web in many directions at once, rotating through several windows. We will open and close windows as we search. In this way, not only will we move faster since information constantly downloads in the background, not only will we not have to retrace our steps, we also begin to search in a way our mind works, in a scattered manner, full of momentary inspirations and clever asides. Moving swiftly in practice. View a page with a large PDF file. Do we click the link and wait and wait and wait while the PDF file downloads? No, hold down the Shift key and open the file in another window. Minimize the new window just as it appears, then continue reading from our first web page. As we read, the PDF will download in the background. Faster? As we read, we encounter a link that interests us. Hold down the Shift button and open the link in a new window. Now return to the first window with the Alt-Tab shortcut and Shift-click on another link that looks interesting. Keep going until we reach the end of the page, then close our current active window. By now, we should have several pages downloading in the background, the first almost certainly ready for us. Go there and start again. 2 advantages emerge. Firstly, this is far more fluid way of search. None of that stopping and starting that takes our train of thought in different directions, constantly showing us new pages organized in different ways. Instead, we read the page we are on completely, then jump to the next page. Secondly, having several pages awaiting retrieval at any one time, we improve the speed we download from the internet. Valuable if we don't have broadband access. Faster still, say we come upon an interesting page that refers to a word we do not understand. We should look it up in a dictionary, right? Type Control-N to open a new window. Press Home to reach our home page, where we have a Google search form ready and waiting. Now search for the definition for our word. We can come back and read this answer later or just wait. And once we learn its meaning, close the window with the Alt-F4 shortcut, and we are back where we first encountered the new word. Say we visit a page and wonder if the author is an expert. A quick Control-N clones the page we are on. Next, click the context bookmarklet on our web browser, the bookmarklet we installed at the start of this chapter. This retrieves a list of further documents located nearby. Skim through this list, judge its value, now close the window. We continue our search better informed, but essentially undisturbed. If we draw this in motion, it would look like a little circle on the side of our search that does not disturb the general flow of our search. I was buying Adobe Acrobat recently, and I found an online store that sold a copy very cheaply at just US$79, far less than the US$299 that Adobe itself charges. It seemed like a good buy. esmartsoftware.net, found at esmart.cjb.net, would get my business. I was about to buy when it occurred to me that I was not yet comfortable providing my credit card details to this unknown company. I wanted to know this company was legitimate. Perhaps I should check the prominence of this website. Have they been in business long? Control-N clones my current page. I click Next, my link bookmarklet, and retrieve a list of other web pages linking to this page. Only internal links. Disturbing. This is not a popular, widely recognized retailer. I change my approach and search for endorsements. I search for sites that mention esmartsoftware.net. I find little more than a page from a university law site describing the sale of legally gray software, explaining that some online retailers sell software without a license on the assumption the purchaser previously purchased a license but lost their legal copy of the software. But this is not for me. I need the normal version. internet-informed, I close both windows and buy from a retailer I respect. Can you see how this way of using multiple windows simplifies the task of gathering Halo information? With only one internet browser window, we stare at the internet through a single looking glass. Any side trip involves moving our attention away from the page at hand, then retracing our steps later. This makes for a very staccato, shaken search style. With juggling, searching the history of a website behaves more like how we think. For a simple aside, we simply open a new window, retrieve some details, close, then continue as before, undisturbed. A search style of our own. Bookmarklets, embedded forms, shortcut keys, and a homepage full of helpful search tools and links to useful websites. All this comes together to create a search style all our own. If we do this right, we cut many of the corners from many of the routine tasks we undertake online. We simplify our search. We develop a fluid process that mirrors how we think. I have my own style, a style built for searching a diverse range of topics in a wide range of depths. The habits I have formed, the flick-of-the-wrist familiarity with certain shortcut keys, my bookmarklets, bookmarks, links, and homepage, all serve to smooth out my search style. This style is fluid, continuous, and unlikely to suit you. There is a style for you. Find it. Find it, and searching becomes more relaxed, more enjoyable, and faster. Instead of taking 5 steps to accomplish something, a search becomes a blur of finger movements and jumping windows. Several steps dissolve into one action we can do in our sleep. At this point, our focus moves from doing 5 distinct steps to searching as a series of actions, of grouped steps that lead us to the information we seek. Said another way, a good search style liberates us from thinking about which link needs clicking and which buttons need pressing. Instead, we think at a higher level about where we want to go and what we want to see. As I log into my webmail service, I remember that I wanted to look for a list of technical bookstores in Australia. I clone my present page, click my homepage button, and with a cursor waiting in the search box, I type technical bookstores in url:.au. I press return, flip back to my webpage mail, alt tab, and open 4 emails in quick succession so they load in the background, shift click. I flip back to my Google search and start refining the search into something useful. My mind hums with activity, not delays. Another occasion and another search style. I chase the contact details for astronomer Forrest Hamilton. I have 8 web pages open in a spray of divergent searches. With one window, I chase an address on a website I am told he manages as webmaster. On another window, I'm trying to find his contact details near his photo where it mentions he's a member of the Hubble Heritage Team. From another window, I seek his details with a global search engine, launching several pages, closing each in turn as they prove unsuccessful. Finally, I read yet another reference to the Space Telescope Science Institute, and it occurs to me he may be on their staff directory. 2 minutes later, I copy-paste Forrest Hamilton's contact details into my leads text document, close everything, then write Forrest an email. Before our enthusiasm reigns supreme, there are 3 negatives about this style of searching. Firstly, having many windows open at one time may have the unfortunate side effect of causing a computer to crash more frequently. Make sure you have a pop-up stopper installed on your computer. I use the Google toolbar that includes a good one. The Internet Software Archive Tucows has plenty of alternatives. This is an absolute must, not because we juggle, but because pop-ups trouble all Internet users. Secondly, Microsoft's Internet Explorer has a difficulty with memory, I am told. Every time a program is run, then closed down, Microsoft Windows loses a little bit of the computer memory. Not much, but gradually enough to slow my computer. Every hour or two, I close down my Internet Explorer, then launch it again. Lastly, we need to remember to keep shutting down Windows as we search, or this becomes an exercise in desktop clutter. This is why I have my text file open to record interesting but divergent search directions. Why bother? I mean, memorizing shortcuts, installing bookmarklets, and a new homepage for searching, running the risk of more crashes. Why? Because it works. You search much more effectively in this way, and the experience is far more enjoyable. You should see me do this one day. Searching this way is fluid and graceful, adjectives usually not applied to computing. The style of searching looks like an amoeba moving through a pond water. We flow forward along many different directions at once. We occasionally taste the supporting halo of information nearby. We reach a place of interest, then push forward from there, again in many directions at once. Amoeboid searching is very different from a search conducted with just one window, a search wandering from page to page, backtracking to past pages before reaching forward again. We may visit the same pages as the amoeba, but visually we see a single thread, a string. Such a path does not foster a search strategy. It often fosters a kind of mental turmoil, where the overall picture, the elevated vista, is the very last thing we think about. Did I mention amoeboid searching is intensely fun? Information piles on us as in a rugby game, fast and aggressively informative. We do not derail our train of thought. We stay on path. We search with purpose. Just what purpose will begin to unfold in the next few chapters.